horror in Las Vegas as a gunman there kills 50 people and sends hundreds to the hospital. This just as mental health advocates try to raise awareness during National Mental Health Week. We're discussing the shooting in Nevada and taking your calls just ahead. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live at 9. Also, make sure to get our podcast on iTunes and through the WJCT app. Just ahead, the nation marks its worst ever mass shooting. Just as National Mental Health Week kicks off, we want your calls right now. Give us a call at 549-2937. Then later, a word of warning. After a series of hurricanes, flooded out cars are flooding the used car market. What you need to know as a consumer. Plus, Culpepper on the Jaguars' overtime loss to the Jets over the weekend. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, the nation awoke to horror this morning. News that 50 people were killed and about 400 sent to the hospital after a man opened fire Sunday night at a country music festival in Las Vegas. Police say the suspect, 64-year-old Stephen Paddock, was found dead in his hotel room after he fired on the crowd and then the SWAT team burst in. In a sad irony, news of this mass shooting, now the worst in American history, is breaking just as National Mental Health Week kicks off. We had planned to begin the hour this morning with a discussion of mental health issues in this country, which are significant. As our regular listeners well know, too often, those issues are intertwined in America with the tragedy and the horror of gun violence. We're going to be discussing all of this right now as we welcome Tara Wilds, Interim President and CEO of Mental Health America of Northeast Florida, Inc. Tara, a pleasure to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Also joining us in studio, Norma Basford. She's former Program Director for NAMI of Jacksonville. That's the National Association for Mental Illness. Norma, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And to our callers, we want your thoughts and comments as we discuss the tragedy in Las Vegas and National Mental Health Week. The number to join us, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on Facebook. Tara, we're still learning the details of what happened in Las Vegas. So far, all we know is that a 64-year-old white man named Stephen Paddock was found dead in his hotel room after opening fire during a Jason Aldean concert on the Vegas Strip. And we know that a number of firearms were found in the hotel room. That said, quite often after mass shooting incidents, law enforcement investigators find a history of mental health issues. And so it's a tragic irony that we're kicking off Mental Health Week now as we learn of this tragedy. It's horrifying.
Yes, it is. And mental health issues affect 1 in 4 Americans. And actually, in the state of Florida, 1 in 2 individuals will actually undergo some sort of mental health crisis or illness that they need treatment for in their lifetime. One of the issues that we have locally and throughout the nation, but particularly locally, is lack of accessibility to mental health care at the earliest point possible. Some of that is due to stigma, and some of that is due to lack of services.
Mm-hmm. And so the whole point of National Mental Health Week, Norma, is to reduce stigma and increase access to care. Later this week, there will be free screenings for people that are suffering from depression and anxiety, for example, correct?
Yes, yes. And there are opportunities for family members to plug into support and education through our organization, which is which is NAMI Jacksonville, a part of the National Alliance on Mental Illness nationally. Mm-hmm. And we have 3 classes that are in progress, and one of them is a peer-to-peer class for those who live with mental illness. The other 2 are for family members.
Mm-hmm. And how can people access this?
We have a website, NAMIJacksonville.org. You can go on there, or you can call our helpline, which is 724-7782. And we get many calls. We probably get about 600 calls a year on our helpline.
It's 549-2937, meanwhile, to join us as we discuss National Mental Health Week. It was what we had planned to talk about today. And, of course, as we woke up this morning, we all received word of the tragedy in Las Vegas, the worst mass shooting in American history. And, of course, that's saying something because there have been so many other deadly mass shootings. 50 killed after a shooting on the Vegas Strip, 406 people, 406 taken to hospitals, a massacre on the Vegas Strip overnight. Tara Wilds, of course, you're former law enforcement with JSO before segueing to your current position as interim CEO at Mental Health America of Northeast Florida. So you're uniquely positioned to talk about these issues as law enforcement responded to this shooting rampage. Law enforcement, tragically, have had to really become experts in responding to these types of situations. As you learned about this, what went through your mind? You know what law enforcement has to deal with in these situations now.
Well, I'm stunned at how overwhelming the logistics of that response has to be. And the subsequent investigation is going to go on for a very long time. And the ripple effects from having lived through this kind of tragedy, not just for the first responders. The first responders, a lot of them will have critical incident stress debriefing and follow-up care available to
them.
They'll
have mental health issues.
They absolutely will. But, as Norma was talking about, family members of the, not just the victims who are actually injured, but almost everybody who was in a situation like that. Think about the impact on your mental health of having lived through a crisis. Think about the PTSD that could occur in some people. It just goes on and on. And as former law enforcement, too, you think about the things that you could have done to perhaps prevent or mitigate issues like this. And you do learn from every incident, but your main goal is to prevent these incidents from ever having occurred.
Of course. And here's a little bit more about what we know. This suspect, 64-year-old Stephen Paddock of Mesquite, Nevada, fired from the 32nd floor of the nearby Mandalay Bay Hotel on the Vegas Strip. It was during the final concert of this music festival, a Jason Aldean concert. An off-duty Las Vegas police officer was among the 50 people killed. Officers found at least 8 weapons, including multiple long rifles, in Paddock's room. And we don't know the shooter's motive. We don't know the shooter's background. We don't know of any known links to overseas terror or terror groups. We don't know if he had mental health issues. We have a lot of questions right now, which investigators are trying to answer. But it's reflective of the sickness in this country. We're a violent country, and we're not a well country. This happens with regularity in this country.
We're a violent country, and we're going through crisis after crisis after crisis. We have a hurricane. We have wildfires. We have an earthquake. We have mass shootings. And it seems like every day brings some new, fresh crisis to our attention. And in all of this, I think a lot of people have the potential to neglect their own mental health. You have to take care of your brain just as much as you take care of your body.
It's 549-2937 to join us. And let's not lose sight of the fact, Norma Basford, that in keeping with National Mental Health Week, you ladies came on the show today to talk about your lobbying efforts to encourage the state legislature to not cut funding for mental health awareness and treatment, correct?
Yes, this is so very important. And I keep wondering how many of these massacres we have to have to let our leadership know that mental health has to be funded. It has to be brought to the front, and we can't keep our heads in the sand about that. I look at it as a hidden epidemic. And even without all of the trauma that's going into going on around us, there is a genetic link to mental illness, and if it has been in a family, then it will most likely continue to affect people in that family. So we have to realize that there is always a need for mental health care, and our system is so broken that families are experiencing trauma without services, you know, to help them.
And we're getting lots of calls, emails, and tweets. Let's go to a few of them. I want to get this email on the air first off from Elena. Elena writes, I take exception to automatically tying the actions of the Vegas terrorist to mental health issues. I live with mental health issues, and it's insulting to those of us who fight daily and don't harm others. The labels of mentally ill and lone wolf are reserved for white male terrorists in this country. If this had been a Muslim person, terrorism would have already been cited, and we would expect all Muslims to condemn one person's actions. If this had been a black person, Black Lives Matter would be blamed. Only a white male can commit such atrocities and not have his actions reflect on his entire community. Tara.
I think that everybody, after an incident like this, looks for the simple solution. They look for the finger that they can point. They can say, oh, it's because of this. It's because of terrorism. It's because of mental illness. It's because of race. It's never about one single thing. But I think it's part of the human condition is that we look for that single thing so that we have something to blame. And the problem is we're not addressing the root cause of where whatever it is coming from, no matter what created the crisis.
And let me be clear to everyone listening. We had booked Tara and Norma before this shooting incident happened because we just wanted to focus on National Mental Health Week. This morning, we woke up to news of this mass shooting, and we just decided to proceed with the segment while mentioning the shooting incident in Las Vegas. So it was simply a tragic coincidence. There was no deliberate attempt to tie the two together. So I hope that I'm clarifying that for folks. Let's go to Carla at the beaches now. Go ahead, Carla.
Hi. I just was wondering what is being done here, especially locally, to improve the mental health facilities that already exist, because I've been a patient at one of these facilities for postpartum depression, and I never received any kind of mental health counseling. There was only substance abuse counseling being offered at these facilities, which I did not suffer from. So I just wanted to know what can be done to help improve and really start to focus on the root of mental health at these facilities.
Tara Wilds.
One of the things that's happening locally here is MHRC opened a comprehensive services center earlier this year. That particular center is set up from 8 to 4:30 every day, including weekends and holidays, to be able to assess people for both mental health and substance abuse issues. We're hoping, should we ever receive the appropriate funding, that comprehensive services center can actually turn into a central receiving facility, which would be a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week operation that would serve as a portal that people could come in and be linked to the services and help they need, regardless of whether it was medical, mental health, or substance abuse related. And most of the time, all three of those issues are intertwined.
Yeah, a one-stop shop. That's long been the goal.
Yes.
Yeah. Carrie in Fernandina Beach. Hey, Carrie, good morning to you.
Hey, Melissa, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to follow up on what Norma said. I have a criminal defense attorney, so I've seen lots of clients and their families really suffer from this issue over the last 40 years. And what we really need, and a lot of national authors have talked about this, is more follow-up treatment controls in the Baker Act system, in the involuntary mental health commitment system. As many of Norma's members and family with NAMI and other organizations know, doing a Baker Act or Baker Acting an individual almost guarantees nothing. It guarantees no treatment, no follow-up, no safety for the patient or the patient's families or associates. And I think that, again, ties into the lack of funding, but also what Tara was just saying about, you know, more facilities, all tied to funding, of course, but there is a movement to strengthen the Baker Act laws so that you would, you know, have people on sort of controlled release, conditional release, as if, like, people who are found not guilty by reason of insanity. I know that's a lot in a few words, and Tara knows what I'm talking about. I know Tara, so hi, Tara. But that's, I think, someplace we really need to look at strengthening the system and the laws.
Thanks for that, Carrie. Norma, the Baker Act has come under a lot of criticism in Florida as people are held for a few days and then let go, held for a few days and then let go. What about that?
It is creating a revolving door because people go in and out of these various crisis stabilization units, and they are, after a few days, they're turned right back out without a plan, without case management, without guidance.
There's no continuum of care.
No.
Yeah.
And you can't treat something so severe in 2 or 3 days. It's strictly, they seem to stabilize them, and that's all they're expected to do. And we need, you know, we need that continuum of care, or this is going to keep happening over and over and over.
And that revolving door revolves between the Baker Act facilities and our county jails as well, because people that aren't appropriately treated and don't have follow-up care, sometimes their symptoms can result in criminal behaviors that then result in arrest. And we could save up to $72,000 a year on each individual with mental health treatment needed that if they stayed out of jail.
And so where do you think that will go this year in the legislature as people go to Tallahassee again this year and try to lobby lawmakers to say, look, we've got to change the way we address this issue in Florida? It's been an uphill battle to try to change the system in Florida.
Yes, and we rank 49th. And under some figures, we rank dead last, 50th
yeah.
in mental health funding in the state. Now, the governor did just appropriate a good deal of money for the opioid crisis to address that. But again, both substance abuse and mental health, those issues often are siloed out, and people want to look at treating each one separately. And for the most part, they're completely intertwined together. And any kind of treatment that we focus on, we've got to look at the person holistically. We've got to look at everything. And we've also got to get that treatment to them at the quickest and earliest time possible.
Mike is downtown. Hi, Mike. Good morning to you.
Hi, for taking my call. Great topic. Great. My mom's a psychologist. I'm very close to the mental health community in that respect. And it's good to hear you talking about this. I wanted to remind people that Jacksonville has a horrible connection to this sort of thing. Back when I was a reporter in the early 90s, the 9 people were shot to death at a GMAC loan processing facility here in Jacksonville. And at the time, it was the worst mass shooting in America. And now we're seeing it escalate. We're now over 50 with this particular shooting. So I'm hoping that people will remember that Jacksonville has a very deeply personal connection to this sort of thing, and hoping that it will, you know, guide our thoughts and our actions as we think about how to proceed forward with this sort of thing.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Sadly, the body count just keeps getting larger and larger as the number of people dying in these events keeps getting bigger and bigger. Here's an email from Rob. Until we collectively come together as a society and address the sheer amount of guns in our streets, access to guns, and the mental health of our citizens, I fear this tragic escalation of events will continue. Here is a tweet from Brian. I respect the Second Amendment, but the one good guy with a gun theory is challenged by a well-placed sniper. Okay, let's take a few more calls. John in Riverside, go ahead. John, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Unfortunately, I want to say I hope everyone had a good morning, but that's not the case today. I wanted to make a brief comment on the different solutions that have been provided. And while I appreciate and respect the professional position of each person, everything seems stopgap. I think we're seeing is a series of different issues affecting mental health in this country. We don't have early mental health intervention with our schools in kindergarten or grade school. We don't have family counseling. We don't have a lot of basic support for the family unit. I think that's where we need to start. To me, that seems to be the main root of all these issues. And early detection can't be through some institution or when somebody faked or acted or through some incident. It should be part of the school system itself. I think it should be.
100% agree. I know here in Duval County, the full service schools do have the availability for a lot of counseling and early intervention and treatment. But the problem is not all our schools are full service schools, and every school needs to have that kind of service available to its students.
Yeah. Thanks for that, John. Norma, you're nodding your head as well.
NAMI has started a program called Ending the Silence. It was new last year. We take a program that is designed for young people into the schools and speak to 8th and 9th graders. Last year, we were able to reach over 1,200 students in public and private schools. And the program is to familiarize students at that young age of symptoms and signs in themselves or others that they can recognize. And we tell them to go to a trusted adult within their school and talk to them about that. Suicide is talked about, and I know we've had suicide in our schools individuals that are dealing with those kinds of issues, usually depression that early on. So Ending the Silence is something that we are trying to get in more and more schools, and we have been approved to go into the Duval County schools.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So,
and by the way, it is National Mental Health Week. NAMI, the National Association for Mental Illness, NAMI.org is an easy website to look at. National Depression Screening Day is October 5th. That's Thursday. If you or someone you know needs a mental health assessment, you can get a free mental health screening. Just go to the website helpyourselfhelpothers.org. Let's take one more call. It's Stephanie on the South Side. Hey, Stephanie. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a licensed mental health counselor here in Jacksonville. I spent 26 years at Child Guidance Center, most recently as a crisis responder in the schools, children as young as kindergarten, all the way up to seniors that had to be Baker Acted for either making threats against themselves or school or their peers. I saw a variety of ages, and it's very sad. Some of the kids had to be Baker Acted repeatedly because they just weren't able to learn how to, no matter how many days they spent on the unit, weren't able to learn new coping tools. I also wanted to address earlier, a woman had called in about postpartum depression. I've also worked in two hospitals as a PRN therapist, and I've worked on several units. And I have to disagree that mental health issues are discussed. In fact, in the groups, the understanding is that the coping tools required for people who come in with mental health and or substance abuse sometimes are the same. We the therapists, as well as the psychiatrists, do address all the underlying mental health issues, but we are all those hospitals, we're not a state facility, so people are only coming in for stabilization. They're not coming in for long-term treatment. And the discharge planning always includes, what are you going to do when you leave here? Who will be continuing your medications? We see a lot of people return because they're not following doctor's orders. They're not, connecting in the community either with a psychiatrist. Sometimes just to go back to their family mental health unit, wherever they're supposed to be going when they leave for outpatient treatment. A lot of times they don't follow through, and then they're coming back into the hospital to be re-diagnosed and have their medications, reissued, sometimes titrated into a higher dose.
Thanks for that, Stephanie. I appreciate that. Tara Wilds, what about that, and what else do you need people to know about Mental Health Week?
Well, one thing that Stephanie mentioned there was the Baker Act and children, and we at Mental Health America did a deep dive, so to speak, on children's Baker Acts in the Jacksonville community. over this past year, and we'll be releasing the results soon. One of the things that we found, we did a sequential intercept mapping to see how the whole process worked out, and we did find that while there wasn't a waiting list for children per se, it was still taking too long for children to get linked into services once they get into the system subsequent to the Baker Act. So we're addressing that with the cooperation and collaboration of all the local providers, so I believe we'll have some success in that area. And our goal is to reduce those multiple Baker Acts for individual children, the ones that are cycling through the system, again, on that focus on getting intervention as early as possible. As far as things that we have coming up at Mental Health America, everyone mark your calendars for November 30th and December 1st. That's going to be the 2017 Mental Health Summit. It will be held at the Hyatt Regency downtown. We had to cancel it because of the hurricane,
right.
So we're kind of dropping back and regrouping, but it will still be an interesting summit full of good information, and we will be looking at legislative priorities for the coming session.
Well, thank you both for joining us on this sad day. Tara Wilds, Interim President and CEO of Mental Health America, Northeast Florida. Norma Basford, Former Program Director for NAMI of Jacksonville. Ladies, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Much more still ahead. Later, the Jags get grounded by the Jets up in New York. Cole Pepper has a look at that game. But up next, lots of flooded out cars are flooding the auto market right now after a series of hurricanes. What you as a consumer need to know, back in a moment.
Join WJCT and Special Forces Association Chapter 88 for a special fundraising reception before the Vietnam War and Stories of Service. The reception supports the SFA Chapter 88 and begins at 6 p.m. on October 3rd. For more information and to purchase your $20 ticket, visit wjct.org/storiesofservice.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
Great question. That is a great question.
And that's a great question. Wow, that's another great question.
That's a great question.
Oh, that's a great that's a great question.
That is a great question.
What a great question.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear unexpected questions and unexpected answers. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon, the best in classic and modern blues, as part of WJCT's After Hours. Tonight at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, thousands of cars around town and the state flooded out during Hurricane Irma. Not only that, Hurricanes Harvey and Irma ravaged Texas and Florida within just a two-week span, leaving many with not just flooded cars, but flooded homes. Keep in mind those water-damaged cars are going to make their way into the used car market. Now, there are some things you can do to make sure you don't unsuspectingly buy one. Consumer law attorney Leslie Goller of Terrell Hogan joins us this morning to make sure we don't buy a soggy vehicle. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
That's the last thing we want because there's probably no way to be sure, correct?
Well, there's no absolute way to be sure, but there's plenty that you can do to keep from buying one, hopefully.
Okay, so what do we need to know if we're in the market for a used car and we don't want to get a flooded one?
Okay, well, The first thing to do is with it's good advice for whenever you're buying a used car is before you buy it, take it to a trusted mechanic and have the mechanic go over it with a fine-tooth comb. You may find out a lot more than just whether or not it's been flooded. Interestingly, in Florida, we do have a requirement that if an insurance claim has been made, and not all of the flooded cars are going to have insurance claims made, but that has to then be reported to the Florida Motor Vehicle Title Information System, and it then will appear on the title. It's called branding. And in Florida, we're one of the few states that require that. It's an example of good regulation, one that's protective of the consumer. But unfortunately, the people get wise on how to eliminate the brand, and that's called washing the title.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. And that what you know, we can make a lot of puns intended besides just buyer beware, which is not a pun, but a title of steer clear of flooded vehicles. Because flooded vehicles are not something you want to buy because majority of the newer cars have a lot of electronic components, sensors, electronic systems, and when there is water and flooding, it gets damaged. And that's why even if there is repair, things are never back to what it was.
Mm-hmm. So if someone has had the title of their vehicle washed, as you say, so someone wouldn't know it's been in a flood, how can you trace that and make sure that you know that they've done that?
Well, you can do your own research. And one of the things you can do is to go to one of the auto sites. There's two commercial ones, which you pay for to be able to see what. And you search by the VIN number. What you want to do is take the VIN number off the car and use those private search systems. They're not perfect either. But there's also two regulatory sites that you can go to. One that's done by the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System. The report costs $10. And there's also another one with the Crime Bureau with cars, and you can search on that. That's actually free. Mm-hmm. That information is on our website, so that if you want to go to the link, you can be able to search that.
Okay. There are some insurance issues you want people, consumers, to know about too, correct?
Well, that's correct. And then and one of the things that I wanted to make sure that you understand is that unless an insurance claim is made in the state of Florida, it will not appear on the title as being having flood damage. It will not be branded. So if a owner of a vehicle decides not to make a claim with insurance, for example, if they have a high deductible and they decide that they don't want to have to pay the deductible for any repair of the car or have that taken away, or they just get the so-called repairs done themselves, it will not appear on the title as being branded.
Now, there's also issues as relates to wind versus flood damage, right, and rainwater versus flood damage. Is that correct?
That's actually more towards property.
That's more property rather than car.
That's
okay.
More your property of your house.
Okay.
With your car, what insures your car is your car insurance, not your homeowner's insurance. With homeowner's insurance, there is a difference made between whether or not it's flood or wind.
Okay. Anything else people need to know?
It's always a good idea to have your car inspected. You need to, there's things that you can look for telltale signs yourself, but I always recommend that before you buy a used car, that you have it inspected by an independent mechanic. Telltale signs you can look for is color differentiation that's in the seat belt, that's in the seats. What happens, it develops when a car has been wet or flooded, is that there mold develops. And it's a very fine, fine particle that you can take your finger and run it in areas where it's not easily cleaned. In the glove compartment, up under the glove compartment, in not the obvious areas. Mold has a particular smell, and mold shows you that the car's been flooded. And if the car has an over-perfumed smell or a chemical smell to it, then you realize that they're trying to mask the fact that there was mold and that there was water damage.
Oh, that's a good tip.
And water damage, another reason why it's particularly bad, and it's something that in Florida that we face with our cars versus other states that are more inland, is salt water particularly damages cars. The salty air that can cause damage, you can see rust in the engine just whether or not it's been flooded. But when a car has been flooded during a hurricane, there's been significant salt water that's gotten in the flooding. And so that causes rust in the engine, and you can find it. And that's what the mechanic is looking for, besides just what's the damage that's happened to the electronic system.
Good advice. She's consumer law attorney Leslie Galler of Terrell Hogan. You can get more information at terrellhogan.com. If you're in the market for a used car, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware, especially after all of these storms. Leslie, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Back in a moment.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name that we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
Hi, this is Keith Marks. Join me Thursday nights at 11 p.m. starting October 12th for Avant Radio. Curious music for curious minds. Only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Welcome back. Well, more than 2 million troops have been deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan since 2001. And with up to 20 veterans in this country committing suicide each day and hundreds more depressed and suffering from PTSD, particularly female veterans, the need for support is great. Luckily, this weekend, there's an opportunity for female veterans around town to get the help and support they need. It comes from Gratitude America, and they provide military support retreats. These are free 4-day experiences designed for any post-9/11 veteran. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Michael Anthony, Executive Director of Gratitude America. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us, Tracy Polson. She's a licensed clinical social worker and psychotherapist. And full disclosure, she's also a candidate for Jacksonville House District 15. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Let's start with you, Michael. This is a free retreat for female veterans this weekend, and this is something a lot of them really, I would think, could benefit from.
Absolutely. Gratitude America's mission is primarily to focus on veterans and their supporters. We offer four-day retreats at no cost all over Florida and Georgia. We do about one per month, and this one's special. My clinical director is a retired Army colonel, social worker, and I'm surrounded by lots of women combat veterans, and they came to me and they said, we've got to do something special for the women veterans because their experience is so much different than maybe just veterans in general. And so this is a very special opportunity. And as you said, it's at no cost.
This is free. This is this weekend, October 6th through 8th. We'll provide details in a moment. Dr. Polson, all veterans come back with issues. What is it in particular, though, for female veterans? What particular issues are they dealing with that you're seeing in your practice?
Well, also they're dealing with how to manage their feelings of shame and guilt. Women have a propensity to want to do it all, be the caregivers, and struggle with acknowledging their own vulnerability and need for help, much like all of us, frankly. What's exciting about this retreat is that our clinical team, comprised of myself, two other psychologists, and Ann Johnson that Michael mentioned, we're focused on a strength-based program following the post-traumatic growth model, and we're integrating areas of self-care that tap into the mind, the body, and providing both sensory experiences that will help these women reconnect with themselves in ways that they may have lost, where trauma becomes sort of locked in the body, and then our bodies can begin to shut down or somaticize in different ways.
It is National Mental Health Week. We were talking about that earlier in the hour. And veterans are dealing with a significant amount of trauma. So during this retreat, they'll be able to start to heal this trauma. What are some of the things they'll be getting to experience?
You know, what we find with all of our retreats, and I'm sure this one will be no different, is that veterans are sometimes unwilling to take that first step and seek the help that they truly need. There's stigma, as you talked about in the first part of the hour, and lots of other factors. So what we try to do is focus on three things. Relaxation, just providing them an opportunity to decompress where they don't have to worry about anything, to relax and enjoy the beauty of Marineland. Then recreation. Veterans are big on getting out and doing things. And sometimes you do so much when you're in the service that you kind of stop getting out and you become a little sedentary. And so we have kayaking late on. We have swimming with the dolphins. We have a gardening segment. My wife is a French pastry chef. She's going to lead them in some baking. So there's lots of neat opportunities to get them out and just enjoy some recreation. And then the biggest thing I think that's going to benefit the veterans that attend is this reconnection with other veterans. You're in, you have a camaraderie, and then when you get out, often you lose that. And pulling the women veterans back together causes, I think, a great deal of strength and healing to occur just through that reconnection.
I would add to that they're not alone, and there's a lot of power and healing and recognizing that you're not the only person struggling with some of the issues that women veterans struggle with as well as men. I would add too that we're integrating some different activities for this retreat. We have two volunteers who are going to be providing plant-based food for us. So we're going to be talking a lot about the nutrition that we put inside of our bodies and thinking about that, as well as Zumba and yoga. Again, a lot of these things sort of integrating the mind-body connection. And then we're going to be journaling, which is something different, and talking about creating a narrative, a coherent narrative that makes sense of one person's experience. I would add one last piece that we do for all retreats, but this will be different, again, with just the women, and that is the mask making. It's an artistic sort of expressive activity that we do. And Michael, I wonder if you could just chat a little bit about that.
As Tracy said, we do this in all of the retreats, but an expressive arts is often a good way to share how you feel, maybe what you've kept on the inside, and display it in a way perhaps that everyone can understand.
You make a mask?
We do. It actually comes from the National Center for the Intrepid. It wasn't our idea, but we've taken it and adopted it into our retreats. And what we ask, we give them a blank mask and a bunch of art materials and ask them to paint the mask as they see themselves. And that's usually very powerful. It was for me.
Some interesting forms of therapy. So how can people access this retreat? It's this weekend and it's free.
It is. We encourage all post 9/11 women combat veterans to apply at gratitudeamerica.org. Also, you can find us on Facebook. It's just search Gratitude America or Instagram. If they want to just send me a text message or call me directly, that since we are so close, my number is 912-674-0332. We do have just a very few number of spaces open. So anyone that wants to hit us up and say they heard about the retreat on your show, Melissa, we'll be happy to accommodate them.
Again, it's Gratitude America's free four-day retreat in Marineland this weekend for female post 9/11 combat veterans. Sounds amazing. Great work from you, Michael, Executive Director of Gratitude America. Also with us, Tracy Polson, licensed clinical social worker, psychotherapist. She's also, full disclosure, running for HD 15. Thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
And Culpepper's up next.
Marketplace Money, we aim to improve your financial life and sometimes save lives.
No one wants to have a laptop explode on them after they spent a couple thousand dollars on one.
Personal finance you can really use.
Saturday afternoons at 4 on 89.9 WJCT.
It's easy to listen to WJCT even when you're not near a radio. Just visit WJCTnews.org from your phone or tablet. On our mobile site, you're just one click away from a 24-hour live stream of our programming, and you'll also have easy access to all of the top local news stories. Listen live on WJCT's mobile website, wjctnews.org.
Hey there, I'm Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A. I grew up in West Palm Beach, just down I-95 from Jacksonville, and it always amazed me how many different kinds of people that highway connects. Now I get to connect with people from all walks of life here on WJCT, debating tough topics with courage, clarity, and compassion. Join us for 1A, weekday mornings at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, the Jaguars waste a major opportunity in New York.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
As they ground the Jaguars, the Jets beating us in overtime by 3 points. Ouch. Culpepper's here with more. Hey, Cole.
Huge opportunity wasted, Melissa. The Jaguars had not been 3-1 to start a season since 2007,
yeah.
10 years ago, anybody can have a bad decade, right? They had the chance to do that against a team that they frankly should have beaten.
I know.
And they just went up there and sadly looked like the same old Jaguars.
You know, and I saw all these people posting on social media that flew up there for the game. They really were excited. They thought the Jaguars were really on a roll, and it was pretty disappointing.
Well, I can tell you, having been in the locker room last week, the players were talking about, this is not the same old Jaguars. We're a different team. This is a different approach. We have a different sensibility. And it would have been very easy to prove that. Just go up there. Just win. And they had so many opportunities to do so. They could have been alone atop the division had they won. They could have had a winning record in the first quarter of the season. Instead, the offensive line didn't play well. They didn't open up holes in the running game, didn't protect the quarterback very well. Blake Bortles didn't play well. He was throwing off his back foot most of the day. Then there was this huge drop pass by Marquise Lee that would have put the Jaguars right in field goal range, which would have been the game-winning field goal. They also gave up three long runs, including the longest run in or second longest run in Jets history as a result of it on a play that was sort of a fluky play where the running back dove through the line, wasn't touched, got back up, and then scampered 78 yards. So it's one of those things that on any given Sunday, they, as they say, any team can beat any team in the NFL. The Jaguars, though, if they wanted to prove something, they had the opportunity to do so, and they did not in losing in overtime to the Jets.
Okay, so let me ask you on a side note. With all the hue and cry over the players taking the knee, this time they kneeled before the anthem.
Yep. Did basically what the Cowboys did on Monday night, which is to, as a team, take a knee before the anthem for a moment of prayer, reflection, whatnot, and then everybody stood with arms locked for the national anthem to show a sign of unity.
And how is that going over with the fans?
I have not seen a lot of pushback from that other than the same fans, by and large, who were upset that they took a knee at all, saying, you know, too little, too late. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see what happens down the road in terms of attendance and in terms of TV ratings to see how it all flushes out. The first Jaguars home game since they took a knee in London will be in 2 weeks when they come home to play the suddenly potent-looking Rams, and we'll see what the attendance looks like at Everbank Field for that one.
Yeah, we'll have to watch that. Okay, so as we follow the Jaguars, meanwhile, the Gators beat Vandy.
Yeah, now, certainly not anything to write home about from a Gator standpoint in general. When you beat Kentucky and Vandy on back-to-back weeks, that's what should happen, right? Mm-hmm. But they did win 38-24 in the process. Luke Del Rio, the quarterback, done for the year, so they're going to turn back to Felipe Franks. I think in the long term, this is a good thing for the Gators because Franks is a redshirt freshman, has the physical tools to be the guy for the Gators. In the short term, it may not be the best thing for them. We'll see. They take on LSU next, who's been struggling this year. A couple of losses, including recently losing to Troy, of all teams. So LSU does not look as potent as they did in past years, and it certainly sets things up well for the Gators in the SEC East. The other team to look for in the East, of course, is Georgia, now number 5 in the polls after whipping Tennessee 41-0. They take on Vandy next week. It's looking now like the SEC East will come down to the winner of the Florida-Georgia game here in Jacksonville later this month.
Okay, a little tight on time, but the Armada lost in Miami over the weekend.
1-0, 9 games left in the season. The Armada just off the bubble for the postseason Friday. They're at Edmonton, then back home on Friday the 13th to face North Carolina FC, another team that's in playoff contention. And I want to give a shout-out to Harold Craw, the general manager of the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. He was named the Executive of the Year in the Southern League. He's the first African-American to ever win the Executive of the Year award in any league in minor league baseball. A moment, he said, was both something to celebrate and something to mourn, the fact that
yeah,
he was the first.
The first.
It took until 2017 for that to happen. But congratulations, and I think we can say that year one of the new brand of the Jumbo Shrimp was a success.
Absolutely. Kudos to them. And follow Cole on Twitter, at Cole Pepper, for all your sports news and notes. Thanks, Cole.
Thanks, Melissa.
I'm Melissa Ross. 1A is up next with a look at SCOTUS cases to watch in the upcoming term. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.